Welcome to the Father's Day. I am Jesse Lee Peterson. Thank you all so much for being with me. I do appreciate it. Remember, the best way to support the Father's Day is joining our membership program now on YouTube or by going to locals.com and becoming a member there. And check out the Parcheese Coffee. I am on coffee now. Amazing. Parcheese Coffee is now available at jesseleepeterson.shop. And I do appreciate it. I have with me Lauren Whiskey. And she is a political activist, media personality, and was the Republican nominee back in 2020 for U.S. Senate election there in Delaware. Lauren, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. Like I said before the show, I'm a huge fan. I'm really grateful to be here, and thank you for the opportunity.
Absolutely. Thank you. It was interesting to watch your video and hear you running for U.S. Senate, and you were so young. What made you decide to run back in 2020 for U.S. Senate in Delaware?
So, interestingly enough, okay, so I have a little different story than probably many, many people. I struggled with addiction all through my 20s. I just could not get clean, and I was hardcore drug use. I was using heroin and methamphetamine, and I wasn't the kind of person that I was supposed to happen to. Like, addiction wasn't supposed to happen to people like me, but it did.
Yeah.
And I got sick and tired. I got clean, and I got sick and tired of seeing all my friends die. Like, it was an issue that I was passionate about. Nobody was doing anything about it. And what better way to bring attention to a national issue than to run for public office? So I based my entire Senate campaign around the issue of addressing the opioid epidemic.
And when you say a person like me, what do you mean by that?
So I went to college on a full ride scholarship. I, you know, played softball and volleyball, and I was, an athlete, and I got straight A's, and I was on honor roll and dean's list, and it wasn't supposed to happen to people like me, you know? And it did. Addiction, it doesn't discriminate, is what I mean by that.
Oh,
and
I see.
Yeah, that is what I meant. I'm not like I'm like too good to be.
No,
it wasn't like I had an excuse. You know what I mean? Like I grew up in an abusive home or something like that. I grew up in a great house with Christian parents, and addiction still found me. So,
and why did you get on drugs like that to that degree? What made you do it?
So it started off with Percocets. In college we were partying and stuff like that. I tried it then. I got a job working for a pharmaceutical company. That's when it really kicked in. I kind of learned this whole lie that there's a pill for everything. So if you have depression, there's a pill for that. If you have anxiety, there's a pill for that. If you can't sleep, now there's even a pill for addiction, if you can believe that. They came up with a pill for addiction to treat addiction. Yeah, but I kind of bought into that lie that there was a pill for everything. I started taking like SSRIs and stuff like that. I wasn't happy. I wasn't whole. I sought happiness through, a pill. And it started with Percocet, but it progressed and progressed and progressed. Like, one Percocet was not enough. Okay, now I need two. Now I need three. Oh, heroin's 10 times cheaper. And back then when I was using, it was real heroin. It was, it wasn't fentanyl like it was now. It's completely changed to something far more deadly, synthetic. It's horrible. But I'm not saying it's all horrible. But it was just a different time, and it just progressed. And then it was, all right, we're going to try methamphetamine to keep me awake because the heroin puts me to sleep. And then it just, it's one thing after another. And then you find yourself in a place where you're like, how did I get here? Like, completely addicted, can't get clean. You know, I within a matter of, you know, it's interesting. When I was on pills, I was able to like maintain a job and that kind of thing. Within a month of starting to use IV heroin, I lost everything. I lost my apartment. I lost my car. I quit my job because I couldn't show up to work. And it was just, it cost me everything. And it's a slow fade. It wasn't like it just starts, you know, oh, I'm just going to start using drugs and I'm going to like lose everything. It progressed. And it was a slow fade, and then you find yourself in this position that you never thought in a million years you'd be in.
So it kind of it came up on you without you realizing how deep you had gotten into it.
Yeah. Maybe. Yeah, I remember. Yeah.
What did your
parents? I remember waking up one day.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
I remember waking up one day and my electric had shut off. And I'm like living in this trap house and I'm looking around like, how did I get here? Yeah. What the? No, but it was sad. And but like I said, I didn't have an excuse really. It wasn't like terrible things happened to me and I used it to cope. You know, it started off as, you know, just a party thing, a feel good thing.
Right.
Oh, this is going to make me feel great and you know, my life fulfilled, and it did for a while. You know, it was fun for a while. And then your body becomes physically dependent on it, and then you can't function without it.
What did your parents think about it?
Oh, well, of course, my parents were heartbroken. Yeah, I have great parents. And, you know, they had actually tried to get me into multiple programs. I went to programs. I walked out of programs. I tried these 28-day detox centers. They now have like methadone programs where you can show up and get your it's basically government issued heroin. That's
right.
What methadone is. It's not a treatment or anything that you could even. It's just a black hole of endless government funding into giving people more drugs. So I tried pretty much everything. Nothing was working. And my parents were super supportive. Like, I mean, they, of course, like they wanted me to get clean. But of course, like at one point, my mom was like, I got to stop giving you money. So I didn't have to get clean because my mom kept giving me money. She kept paying my electric bill and keeping me afloat. So
right.
I didn't really have to, you know, and then finally, when, you know, she realized like, you know, this, I have to stop doing this. And when she cut me off, you know, I had to deal with the consequences of my life. And, you know, I remember like that moment when I was looking around where I was in this trap house. I had lost everything. Drugs had cost me everything.
That's amazing.
And I'm sorry?
How did you finally get off it?
So I actually am a Teen Challenge graduate. So Teen Challenge is a Christian long-term residential program. It was founded by David Wilkerson back in, I think it was like the 1960s. It's a long-term facility. So basically, my parents take me to this place, get this. So it's like out in the mountains in the middle of nowhere. So I can't leave. I mean, I could leave. You can leave. But it's like I'd be like in the wilderness in the Shenandoah Valley of Virginia out in the middle of nowhere. And I was there for a few days. I'm like planning my escape. I'm like, all right, I am definitely not staying here. They had us cutting wood. They had us scrubbing toilets. It was like boot camp. Terrible. But like every single day I would tell myself, okay, I'm going to leave tomorrow. But while I was there, God started to work on my heart and I started reading his word and the things he says about me. And, you know, he started to build me, like rebuild me from the inside out. And it was a total character change. It was, you know, I had so much pride. I didn't want to admit I had a problem.
Right.
I can fix this. I can handle this. Yeah. I can quit anytime is what I told myself. But, you know, it was like once I let that all go and listened to the things that Christ said about me and, you know, the things that he had placed on my heart and how he sees me. And I just started to rebuild my character from the inside out. And a year later, I was still there. I didn't leave. I became quite a mountain woman. I became very good at chopping wood and scrubbing toilets by that point. But I graduated and then I stayed and I decided to give back. And I became like a program director of Teen Challenge. I then got a job working for the Trump campaign in 2018. And it was like everything that like I had wanted, God gave to me. But I like every opportunity I could have ever wanted, God gave to me. But it was like only after I had submitted to his will in my life and stopped trying to do things my way and try to fix things my way. And once I did that, it was, you know, he just opened doors that no man can open. Like
absolutely.
I literally had the Trump campaign calling me, asking me to come out to Iowa and help my president win his election.
That's amazing.
Back in 2020. It was very cool. Now God has done amazing stuff in my life. He's a very real, tangible God.
Absolutely.
He's so real and he's so alive and he loves us very much. But what I really was sick and tired of doing, I was watching all my friends still struggle, though. I was watching them struggle. I was watching my friends die. I don't have any friends left from that era. They've all died. Overdoses or some kind of tragic accident. Some of them were killed by people in bad deals. And nobody was doing anything about it. No politician has really addressed the root issue of the opioid epidemic. It started with mass immigration. You know, nobody wants to admit the fact that, hey, these drugs are coming across our southern border. Now it's fentanyl, which comes from China to the cartels in Mexico and then across the southern border. But they targeted the Rust Belt. They targeted areas that had lost all their manufacturing. I was a pharmaceutical rep. I remember seeing the marketing for Suboxone, which was, it's a opiate replacement drug. You know, this is going to help cure your addiction. This is going to stop everything. You know, the marketing around pharmaceuticals, it's extraordinary. When I went to pharmaceutical school, they basically taught me how to manipulate doctors into making my clinical trials look like they were legitimate. Like these, I remember I sold a drug. It was a fibromyalgia drug, and it didn't work. It was trash. But they taught us how to sell it to the doctors, to get the doctors to write it, prescriptions for their patients, a pain medication. So it's really just a very corrupt industry, the pharmaceutical industry. They were all in on it. It started with the Sackler family getting people addicted to OxyContin. And then when you pull the OxyContin off the, you restrict people who are physically dependent on it, they start seeking out elsewhere. So they go to the streets, buy Percocet, and then they probably fall into the same path that I did. So it's just it's something that nobody was addressing. I wanted it addressed, and that's why I ran.
Right.
And I actually, so I ran on federal funding for year-long residential facilities because it worked for me. And it has an 80% success rate, but it's faith-based. So I do think that there is, I do truly believe that there is a difference between just secular rehab facilities and faith-based because it has the Jesus factor. And
right
the Jesus factor, I mean, he is the absolute king of kings and he can break every chain. There's no chain he can't break.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, so I'm a big advocate of long-term residential facilities. RFK did talk about that recently, which I was really happy to see, as opposed to the 28-day facilities that they currently are funding.
Amazing.
So
what in running, what did you learn about when you were running for office? What did you learn about yourself and people that you
did not
know before, you didn't realize about human nature before? What did you learn from that?
Well, I learned a lot very quickly. I learned I learned that politicians are all beholden to somebody. You are beholden to somebody. You'll get offered. Basically, I mean, I gotta say it. I was shocked to find out what could happen to you if you don't commit to giving a certain amount of foreign aid to a certain foreign country. They tore me apart because I wouldn't commit to a certain amount of foreign aid. And I, you know, they were like basically saying, you know, they put this contract in front of me and they were like, hey, you know, if you commit to this, we're going to throw our support behind you. It's the Jewish Federation of Families is what it was. And I said, I don't believe in foreign aid. I think that it's unconstitutional. No American ever signed up or agreed to having 30% of their income sent to a foreign country, period. Whew. And they unleash the dogs on you. And their dogs are the media. So basically, they work in these foreign lobbyist groups, work in tune with the media to start garnering hit, like supercharging hit pieces on you. And it actually backfired on them, too, because like they did a whole thing on my addiction history and every single little dirty detail of my life. It was brutal. But here's the thing. You won't find a family in the United States of America or in the state of Delaware that has not been affected by addiction in some way.
Right.
So that's why it backfired. And specifically the Jewish Federation of Families, they personally don't understand grace and they don't understand like forgiveness and mercy and the comeback. And that's what I represented.
So let me ask you, so like the lobbyists would come to you as a candidate, and they would say to you, if you support this foreign aid or whatever, we'll support you and we'll help get you in, right? And once
basically,
you say
yes.
no to that, they offer you money as well or just support in your campaign?
So I know that it does come with money, but they specifically said support. And I tried to kind of go around the foreign aid. So it was like, okay, well, I'm not going to commit, sign this thing saying I'm committing to a certain amount of foreign aid, but I will label CARE a domestic terrorist organization. Like I tried to give them other offers and they're like, that's great. But you got to sign this. And I didn't. And it was like a trigger pulled because, I mean, days later, like I declined. Days later, hit piece. And it was just a light turned on. And they did offer their support, but they didn't actually say, hey, if you don't, like, we're going to, you know, essentially campaign for the other guy. But it's
how
it's
did
not,
you handle the attack? From the media, once this attack started, how did you deal with that? You were so young and out there doing this. How did you deal with the attack?
So I actually, day one, I got ahead of it because I knew that they were going to try and use my addiction against me. So day one, I put it on my campaign page. Yes, I struggle with this, and this. This is what I did, and this is why I'm running. So it kind of disarmed them. And what they did was they actually went, the media went and contacted, I think, the police department from I got a DUI at one point when I was, and they got the dirty details of that arrest. Yeah. So then they published those dirty details of that arrest in the newspaper, but it didn't wield as much power because I had already been honest. And, you know, they can't blackmail you if you tell the truth and they know everything. I was like, well, what else are you going to do to me? That was kind of brutal. It was kind of embarrassing. I just kept pushing on. I mean, I told her, I would say, you know, that it's the all-American comeback story, you know, but I'm here now and I'm clean and I'm running for office and I'm here so your kid doesn't have to die of addiction. That's what I'm fighting for.
And were you offered by other lobbyists, like as you were moving along, did other lobbyists come to you and say, hey, represent this for us or do this, we'll support you? Were you offered by other lobbyists as well?
So it wasn't, I think I used the word lobbyist. So I guess they're nonprofit groups but it's essentially lobbyist groups. Yeah. So you'd be approached by, you know, the marijuana lobby or the marijuana groups. There was medical freedom groups, that kind of thing. People kind of like similar to RFK's Children's Health Defense Fund. So there's different groups with different interests that do approach you during your campaign. And, you know, you have a choice. You know, I would love to have everybody's support, but I'm not going to sacrifice my values based on that support. I even was approached by a witch group, like they wanted religious freedom to preach on share their faith or whatever it is on military bases. And it was you get asked everything. There's tons of people that approach you trying to, they bribe you with their support. Essentially, they're like, hey, if you sign this and commit to this, we will throw our support behind you. So you will be approached by a plethora of different groups.
And did they turn against you as well?
They did not, actually. I can't remember. Oh, yeah. So I actually, this is a big mistake. And I actually do regret it this day because I was really just freedom. Absolutely. Everybody should have the right to share their faith. Because I believed that, you know, everybody, you know, should, that's what makes America great, is having religious freedom. I now have changed my position on that. And I think that all other religions should be banned in America. So I've changed since then, but I did, I did sign that saying, yes, I'll protect
Amazing.
Your religious freedom. But now I'm just like, nope, we should criminalize atheism, every other religion.
That's amazing. And so what did you learn about the voters that you had not realized before you ran? What did you discover about voters?
I realized that there are a lot of families that are affected by addiction, and it's an issue that crosses the aisle. So I had left-wing journalists come up to me. I remember one specifically. He worked for this vile, nasty newspaper, a far-left progressive reporter, and he came up to me And he was like teary-eyed. He's like talking about his son and how he struggles with addiction and he's on methadone right now. Do you think this is going to work? Blah, blah, blah. And like, it was like, I was able to have conversations with left-wing people over an issue that we both shared. And I even gave those people hope. And that was, I thought it was, you know, I learned a lot from them that everybody is struggling with this. Like all of their kids are struggling with this. And it's really sad. It is an issue that nobody talks about. And yeah, we have a lot of parents now, grandparents who are raising their grandchildren because the kids are so screwed up on drugs and nobody has any hope. There isn't any solutions. The drugs keep coming across the southern border. You know, people are getting addicted to now not just heroin, but fentanyl, which, like I said, comes from China through Mexico and then across our southern border. And it's killing people instantaneously. It's not something that is a mild drug. Like, it is a lethal drug. It is a weapon that is taking Americans out.
So let me ask, do you blame the drug dealers, the politician, the media, or the people who take the drugs?
Oh, no, I absolutely take self responsibility. So it is, everybody has a choice. I do not believe addiction is a disease. I believe that is a cop out. I believe that everybody has a choice. And every day I woke up and I made a choice to continue using.
Right.
And I think if a lot of people take responsibility for their addictions, we would see a lot better results. However, I do believe that, you know, things happened. It was, I remember Milo Yiannopoulos said something one time. It was intentional. It was done to them. The Rust Belt states, what they did was they pulled the manufacturing. These people became impoverished. They lost all hope. These communities lost all their hope. And manufacturing was sent overseas. People lost their jobs. I know in the state of Delaware, DuPont went down and all these families lost their jobs. And people started to lose hope. And when you lose hope, you start to look for hope in different places, you know, or some kind of Band-Aid. And, you know, when that Band-Aid is drugs, which are very readily available because of our open borders, it's the perfect storm. And then you have an opioid epidemic, which we do have an epidemic. It is an epidemic proportions right now.
Let me
so I do believe, yes, that personal responsibility is huge. However, there are ways to help remedy that.
So you said he lost hope. If we had our faith, a hope in God only, and then we lost everything, houses, friends, family, children, whatever, is it possible to feel hopeless or be hopeless if your faith is 100% in God?
Well, I think that's a person by person basis. You know how Job in the Bible, he lost everything and he kept his faith and his hope.
Yeah.
I would like to say that I would be the same way, but I don't know if I could. You know, I don't know if I could.
Do you believe it's possible to never lose hope once you truly believe in God? No matter.
Well,
because he said that you have to give up the world, meaning that you cannot have anyone or anything more important to you than that, right? And
it's true.
And so do you believe that if you truly have faith in God, you're one with the Father, you and the Father are now one, and then the whole world turned against you, you lost everything, do you think you will still have hope and perfect peace?
I'd like to think so. However, no, but the truth is, yes. I mean, he is all you need.
Right.
God, Christ, he is all you need.
Yeah.
How people feel sometimes, they will sometimes, they prefer their self-pity. They prefer, they choose to wallow in sadness as opposed to, okay, I'm going to put my faith in God. And everybody makes different choices. And, you know, I mean, he is enough, though.
Yes.
I will say that. He is enough. Yes.
Absolutely. I got to ask this, and I want to move on because of time.
Sure.
When you were running as a Republican for the Senate there in Delaware, how were you treated by other politicians, both left and right? How were you treated by the politicians?
Oh, both the left and right did not like me. The GOP endorsed another guy. And let me see who else. there was, of course, Chris Coons, who was my opponent. He just refused to debate me. He ran from me. He slandered me as an extremist. And, you know, we had right-wing politicians, Republicans, disavowing me. But let me tell you something. Something happened that year, because if you look at my election compared to any other years, I broke the Delaware record in most votes for a Republican candidate ever in Delaware history by 50,000 votes. So 50,000 new voters showed up to vote for me that year than any other year. They buried me alive in mail-in ballots. So had it been any other election year, I would have won. They changed the law to beat me. They changed the law for the mail-in votes and then changed the law right back after my election. The judges ruled it unconstitutional. So we had 1 year in Delaware history that we had mail-in voting, and they buried me alive that day. I walked into election day. He had 186,000 mail-in ballots already in for Coons. So it was like I didn't stand a chance. However, something they had to do that because I had brought out a whole plethora, like a whole army of new voters with my message. So there is a desire there. There is motivation there. And there are voters there who will listen to our extremist content or our extremist beliefs, who believe exactly and think the same exact way that I do. They support no foreign aid for any country, no exceptions. They support, faith-based solutions for opioid epidemic. They support a 10-year immigration moratorium, which I ran on. You know, there are people that I guess I would say they're the silent majority. They are out there. Yes.
Yes. I noticed that when Republicans are running against each other, they always complain about how the Democrats treat Republicans and how liberals treat Republicans. But I noticed that when you don't agree with them, Christians do the same thing. But when you don't agree with them, they turn on you and they treat you in the same way they say liberals treat you. It's like something comes out of them that is in liberals when they disagree with you or run against you or something like that. Did you experience that? Did you see that?
Yes. One specifically, his name was, I forgot his name, but he was a Republican state senator in Delaware. And he was as good as the left. He started slandering me publicly. Yeah. He was up for reelection, too. And he started just, you know, joining in on the hit pieces and sharing them. And he really, you know, was as good as a progressive liberal. And he was supposed to be, you know, my party. He was supposed to be a conservative Republican.
Right.
He actually ended up losing his race, actually. It was, like, close. He lost by, like, 10 votes or something like that. I was, like, thrilled. But that's what happens when, you know, you attack the popular message that everybody's kind of agreeing with you on behind the scenes.
Yeah.
And yes, they are. Some Republicans are just as bad as Democrats. There's no difference. They just have an R next to their name.
Absolutely. That's amazing. One of the things you said during running, you said that it was a mistake to give women the right to vote. I totally agree, by the way. But when you said that, when you expected to get women votes, what did you expect once you said that?
I actually saved that for after the campaign.
Oh,
so,
okay.
But I've always held that belief.
Yeah. Me too.
After I saw this picture one day, and it was comparison what America would look like if only women voted and what America would look like if only men voted. And it was blue wave for the women and a red wave for men.
Yeah.
And as women, they're so emotional.
Yeah.
They are responsible for a lot of bad things that have happened in this country by the way they vote.
Yes.
Because they vote based on how it makes me feel. How, oh, those poor kids at the southern border, we have to let them all in. Oh, it's inhumane.
Yeah.
You know, oh, these, you know, it's just they make choices based on emotions and womanly care and nurturing, I guess, which is like in our instinct, versus what is practical, what is right, and what is the unpopular thing to do, which men are far more likely to to do, and they don't really care about what people think about them, as opposed to women who care about what everybody thinks about them. So it's just a really bad thing that happened. We go all the way back to women's suffrage. Things have not gotten better since then for America.
Right.
Look around us.
Yeah.
You know, things have only gotten worse as more and more women not only are voting, but they're taking positions of power within our country as well. So the more women that have taken public office, the worst legislation that has been presented, it's just worse policy. It's bad policy, and it's hurting our country because these women are making the decisions, and they also have like something to prove. Like all these women have like a chip on their shoulder, and it's just like, I got to prove, you know, I'm a woman, hear me roar.
I'm going to
sign off on these open borders. And it's just because it makes me feel good. And their women are, it's just terrible.
Yeah.
It's the worst thing that ever happened to our country. And also, also pulling mom out of their homes, too.
Yes.
It really has destroyed our country.
Absolutely.
We have a jacked up generation right now, and it's because nobody's mom is home raising them.
That's deep. That's amazing. Yeah. And that is true. I talked about the Democratic Party on my show the other day, and I realized that the Democratic Party is never going to return to what it used to be. It used to be a little bit more conservative than what it is now. And what I realized is that they have allowed the black women to take over the Democratic Party. And the party is pretty much controlled by black women, liberal white women, and some weak beta men. And so I'm like, and they're all afraid of the black. Look at Jasmine Cricket. She is out of control.
I know.
That kind
I
of person have no business representing us, America, in government. The world is looking, you know what I mean? And she's literally
true.
Out of control. And there's women like her that's running the Democratic Party. And I don't think, unless they get rid of these people, which won't happen, I don't think the Democratic Party is going to ever return.
No, we have watched because it's unpopular.
Yeah.
You know, they rose to power. And then they left their voter base behind. So, you know, my grandmother was a Democrat. She was alive during the time of JFK. She was a JFK Democrat, the Bill Clinton Democrats, that kind of thing. He was socially conservative, even though he like has turned out, you know, what we know now. But back then he was socially conservative, economically liberal. And that's kind of what the Democrat Party used to be.
Yes.
And Obama was anti-gay marriage. And women, it's just women. Women have come into the party, the Democrat Party. They've risen to positions of power.
Yeah.
They took over, you know, the Democrat National Convention. And then you watch as they have, speaking of emotion, the trans kids thing. That has been a huge woman push movement is what it is. Protect trans kids. You know, yes, you should be able to cut off your genitalia at the age of 6 if you decide that you're a girl, you know, because of how it makes them feel. You see all the crazy moms on Facebook that like their poor kid, they're like, oh, going to get our hormone shots for our little kid and chemically castrate them publicly. They do it for attention because it makes them feel good.
Yeah.
Well, those same women are running for public office and making that policy. And then they also make policy that hurts people that don't. Parents now, I know in the state of Delaware, you're not allowed to like deny your kid transgender services, or they can report you to CPS. It's crazy, crazy what they've done. And it's all by women. And actually, it's a black woman that wrote that policy, too, in the state of Delaware. And they just, what is up with black women? Like, they have no sense. And
It's
it's dangerous. And they left their party behind. And you're right. They are destroying their party unless something radically changes, which I don't see happening because nobody wants to stand up to the black woman. Everybody's just kind of, they don't want to be accused of being racist or whatever. So, I mean, I don't see a return of it if it continues the way it does. But that's why you see them doing that with Gavin Newsom. They're trying to prop up Gavin Newsom as the new Democrat Party.
Yeah. I noticed that they don't, even in the Republican Party, they are afraid, except for Trump. They're afraid to correct the black women. They're afraid of being called racist or misogynist, whatever, right? And then the black women are quick to say, who are you to judge me? I know what it is. You don't know what it is to be a black woman. We have had it rough all the time. And they're lying.
Yeah.
But they get away with it because they know that white people are afraid of them. And they're not going to tell them the truth. They're not going to correct them. And so they always use that. I remember a long time, long story short, before I really got into politics, I was really young. Maxine Waters came to L.A. It was during the break, when they were on break. And Newt Gingrich was in office at the time. And he was really having an impact. And Maxine came in and to L.A. She had a little town hall meeting. And she was like, you shouldn't be afraid of the white people. I just tell Newt Gingrich off. I tell the white people off. I don't care. And the black people applauded. And I'm like, what is this about? This doesn't even make sense to me. And it didn't make sense then. And it makes sense now because I know that the white people are afraid of them. My concern, too, is that the Great White Hope have appointed a lot of women to run his administration, his organization, right? And he's put them in position of power. And I'm concerned that because of the order of God, that these women were not created to lead in that way, they were created to follow. I'm concerned that eventually these women are going to take over the party, and we're going to have because it's not in their nature to lead because of the emotion, and God didn't make it that way. I'm concerned that they're going to do the same thing. I saw, I guess it's Christy Noor over the Department of Justice or something.
Right? Are you talking about Christy Noor?
The woman that's over the border and all that.
Yeah, Christy Noor. She's speaking of Christy Noor. So she actually couldn't even conserve the women's bathroom in her state. So there was this bill that came up to protect young girls in school sports. You know, it was no boys in girls' locker rooms. It was something really obvious. She couldn't even, she vetoed that bill because she, you know, again, she was filled with emotion, these poor trans kids, you know, whatever. She couldn't even conserve the women's bathroom. And then he put her in charge of DHS, and now she's managing our southern border, which is a disaster. And you talked about the order of things. Yes, women are not, we are not designed. God did not design us to be leaders. He designed men to lead and us to nurture, follow, and support. And that's basically, you know, what we are designed to do. And when you see us outside of our design or our calling, disaster happens. But you know what else? They've ran women presidents twice now, and America as a whole has decided no, that is not for them, because people instinctually know women should not be president of the United States. It is not going to be good for our country if we put a woman in that position of power. We need a man to lead our country. So there is still hope there, where people as a majority are voting against women being in these positions of power. Trump had to literally place Christy Noor in that position. But yes, I am concerned because she couldn't even conserve the women's bathroom in her state and vetoed a bill that was very important to protect young girls and girls' sports in schools. So
yeah, I saw her in a picture recently promoting the border situation, and she had all these border patrols and other men all gather around her, and she was in the middle of the picture with trying to look all tough like a man, and it did not work. And it made the men look weak. And I'm just concerned at why do you think Donald Trump put so many women in position of so-called control like that?
Because people have called him a misogynist, and white men, if he filled his cabinet and everything with white men, the media would have a field day, I guess, in calling him, you know, this is the rise of white men. And, you know, he's probably got women nagging at him in his administration, like Susie Wiles, who was his campaign manager. I think he made her chief of staff. So you have a woman in charge of your chief of staff saying, oh, you can't have all these men running your cabinet and running your country, because they're going to have a field day with that. We have to put women in these positions. So I think those decisions are being made by a woman. I think if it were probably up to Trump, but also he needs to stop listening to women. Like, that's the thing. Like, he started listening to women and it's not a good thing. Yeah. And, you know, Susie Wiles, like, she claims that she won the election for Trump with her messaging and stuff. No, Kamala was just that bad.
Yes.
Like, he probably should have won by more, but Susie, like, really messed up a lot of his messaging. It was very bizarre. It was a very bizarre campaign. It was like, almost like they were trying to drive off conservative voters. But however, Kamala was just that bad. Like, that's why, you know, he won. But also, I don't know why he's putting all these women in these positions, but I'm pretty sure it has something to do with his chief of staff, Susie Wiles.
And the unfortunate thing is that it's going to end up destroying America eventually, because the black women have already taken over and are taking over the Democratic Party, followed by liberal white women with them, or liberal women. And eventually you're going to have the Republican Party controlled by nothing but women, and it'll just be over. It'll just be over. I wish, it's a wish, that let's say Trump had elected all white men, just all white men. I wish it wouldn't matter. Okay, these are the best qualified men for this situation now. I'm going to let these men, doesn't matter what you say, these men are going to do their job. You can call them whatever you want. I wish we had that, you know, that type of thing happening. And it really would make America great again. But you got to get over the fear. You got to put what's right first in order to live that way.
Yep. And, you know, for example, Christina, yeah, she took that picture looking all tough with those men. And she's like, yeah, we're going to crack down on these cartels, these importers. Okay, but when it comes to making the hard decisions, yeah, of course, it's easy to deport cartel criminals. But when it comes to making the hard decisions, she's not going to be able to make it. She's
right.
Going to make those decisions as a woman.
Yeah.
If it means deporting little children or separating them from their families or whatever, she's going to do the opposite of what is good for our country because of how it makes her feel, because she's a woman. And instinctively, she is not designed to make the hard decisions and upset everybody. She is designed to take care and, you know, make sure the children are okay. She is not going to be able to do the job that we need her to do.
I totally
agree.
Because
she is a woman. Yes.
Absolutely. Even in that picture where she was trying to look tough, she had on a man vest and all that. It still didn't work. You know,
her tough was like she wrote a book talking about how she shot her dog. She's like, yeah, this can make me look tough. And it made her look like a psychopath.
What a mess.
Crazy. I know.
You said one other thing. And I'm looking at the clock here, going by like 90 going north. You said that there was a time, and you mentioned this, that you could only vote when you own land, if you own land.
Yes.
And I've said the same thing over and over. And I remember it was said that the reason that, and I learned about this, that if you own land, you're more likely to vote. You wouldn't be in favor of all these programs and all these things, because it's the landowner that end up paying for the program. Your home, your prices goes up on the home, your taxes goes up, and you end up suffering. And if you don't own land, you don't care about that. But when you own land, you don't want to be paying all these taxes and things for your property. I love that idea that you can only vote if you own land. I love that.
No, I like it too. It means you have skin in the game.
Yeah.
You know, I own a part of this country. It's mine. And, you know, that is why I should be able to make the decisions about it, because I have skin in the game. And what happens to my country affects me because I'm a part owner of it. And now I do believe I am strongly against our property taxes. I believe that
if you
don't pay taxes to the government and they can take it away from you, is it really mine? I don't really think that that land really isn't mine, because the government, I know I went on a rabbit trail there, but I just wanted to say that, vent about that for a minute. But yeah, you're right. Absolutely. You have to have skin in the game, because you look at people who just take. They continue to vote for the handout every single time. People that are living in Section 8 housing, of course they're going to continue to vote to solidify their Section 8 housing and preserve that. Is that the word I was looking for? Preserve that Section 8 housing, preserve those food stamps, that government cash assistance. They're never going to vote apart from that, losing that, because they don't have skin in the game. They don't care. They just want their handout. They don't care what it does to our country or what it does to our neighbors or anything like that. They get what they want, and that's what they'll vote for every time.
You're so right, too. Because of the tax thing, you never own your home.
Yeah.
I know so many people who literally paid their homes off. I know people who moved here before I did. I came in 1968, and so there are people who came ahead. They bought homes. They paid them off, and now they're still paying taxes on their home. And if they don't pay the taxes, the government come and take the homes away from them. I'm like, what? That doesn't even make sense to me. When do you not have to pay for your home anymore? And where is it that hands-off government, you cannot take my house? And what gives the government the right to, I work hard to pay for my home, pay it off, and you still can come and take it away? That's not logical. Somebody needs to change that.
I agree 100%, 110%, because if I have to pay property taxes and they can take it, it's not really mine.
Right.
Also, nobody agreed. Okay, so also, especially when they're giving trillions and trillions of dollars to other countries.
Yes.
Like, we give trillions of dollars in foreign aid to other countries, but you're going to take my money for a house and property that I own, I worked hard to pay for, and, you know, I live in the state of Florida, our property taxes are just soaring through the roof. They're so high, and it's like almost like another mortgage, and I'm watching them take my money and send it overseas to other people. And, you know, it has been kind of great to watch the Elon Musk initiative with the Doge initiative, where they're saving money and cutting government waste and stuff like that. But I would love to see property taxes come to an end. It should be we should demand it. Actually, now's the time to demand it, I think, too, especially since we're saving money. But I think we also should end all foreign aid and bring all our money home.
It's time to take care of America first.
Yes, totally, exactly.
Totally take care of America. And then, if we want to help someone, we can. But we need to take care of home first all the way. And it's so, I have to tell you this, and then I got to move on. I know some people who pay for their homes, and they're now old. And once they pay for their home, because they're now getting Social Security or whatever, they retired, they lost their home after they paid for the home. And they were so proud that they had paid for the house. They were telling all the family members, oh, it paid off. They had no idea that one day they would lose it because they could not afford to pay the taxes on it.
Criminal. It really is criminal.
It is.
And because, people retire, they're stuck on a Social Security check. They're stuck on a limited income. With property taxes continuously going up, they can't afford it. So they lose their house and their property that was theirs that they paid for because the government keeps raising their property taxes.
Yep.
And it is criminal. It really is. I think we should actually make this a national issue.
It should
and
be.
Demand that Donald Trump ends it.
Yes. That's a good idea. Amazing. Yep. So let me ask, do you have anger?
Do I have anger?
Yes.
I don't know. I don't think I'm an angry person. I don't have a shred of anger, I don't think.
Do you have
That's a good question. Do I get angry? I have gotten angry before.
Go ahead.
But I'm pretty good at being level-headed and making, trying to make decisions not in anger. I try not to make decisions when I'm angry.
And do you have perfect peace?
No, who does? I wish, but I mean, perfect peace. It's my, I mean, I am at peace. I'm at peace. Yeah, I guess I could say perfect peace, but I mean, my life sometimes gets chaotic, I know God's got my back, so I do take peace in that.
And so do you have perfect peace?
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, perfect peace through Christ, yes, and he is perfect. He is the perfect Prince of Peace. Is my life 100% peaceful? No, I don't think so. I work in media, so. No.
Do you believe it's possible to have perfect peace even working in media, even while working in media? Do you believe that's possible?
I think so. I'm sure it is. I'm sure if I actually took more time to be still and spend more time with God. I haven't been good about that. I've been busy. I've been, just busy. And
so you're too busy for God.
Achieve it, yes.
You're too busy for God.
It's awful. No, I mean, I could put aside more time to spend with Him. Yes,
yeah.
I will say that for sure. Yes.
Do you want perfect peace?
I would love to have perfect peace.
Drop your anger.
But I'm not angry. I'm not angry about anything.
But you get frustrated and anxiety and all that, right?
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah.
Well, that's coming from anger. That's due to anger. If you didn't have anger, you could not have anxiety or worry or anything. And you could be working in media and people attacking you in media, working, you would not be bothered, but you got to drop the anger.
Right. And, you know, I do hold grudges, too. I'm very bad about that.
Yeah.
Like, I never forget. And when people do me wrong, I hold on to that forever.
Yeah.
And I could do better about that. And that's probably a form of anger
it
at
is.
Those people.
It is.
You know, people where they did me terrible and I didn't do anything to deserve it. But, you know, and I just, you know, I hang on to that. And that's probably something truly I could probably work on.
Absolutely. Drop the anger, all of those things would disappear. Anxiety, strife, gossiping, jealousy, revenge, suicidal thought, false identities of yourself will all disappear because we were not created by God to have anger. It's abnormal for a human being. We were created to love one another, not to hate one another, right? And it's abnormal to have anger. It's abnormal to be frustrated. It's abnormal to hold grudges. It's abnormal to judge. But if you drop the anger, all those things would disappear and the world could not touch you at all.
Right. And even the Bible says, it says, you know, be angry, but sin not.
Yeah.
He even addresses anger and how to not act in your anger.
Yeah.
Because then it becomes a sin, you know? So when, you know, it's okay to be upset and angry and stuff like that. When you start acting on that anger, that's
but
when you get in really big trouble. So you got to address it before it gets
to you can literally live
sin.
A life with no anger at all because it's a spirit and God would take it away from you and it would be in you. So no one can ever make you angry because the spirit of anger is not there. You want me to tell you how to drop it?
Yeah, sure.
Do you want to live a life of anger free? No anger. You speak
well, see,
up, but you just won't have the anger.
There's no way that you can live a life without anger because things sometimes happen. Like people are horrible people sometimes and they do terrible things to you that make you angry. I think you can avoid. I mean, even Jesus got angry and he started flipping tables when they were turning his father's house into a merchant center.
Well, he didn't
get angry.
He didn't have human anger at all. He had no emotions.
Righteous anger is what he had.
Right.
Yeah,
it wasn't judgment at all. It was just seeing what was wrong and taking care of it without feeling anything about it. May I tell you, because of time, how to drop your anger?
Okay, let's hear it. I'm curious now.
And if you do it, I promise you it'll work.
Okay.
I'm telling you as a witness.
No, because I am so angry at people. I'm not angry in general, but I'm still angry at people in the past who have done me wrong.
Yeah.
You see what I mean?
But when you're angry at people like that, you're judging them. And as you, when you judge, it comes back on you. You notice that every time you judge someone or you get angry at someone, you feel the pain on the inside of you. Because what you're doing to others, you're really doing it to yourself. The pain
yep.
is in you. Here's what
and when you choose
do.
To forgive people, it's for you. Like, you know, it's not about for necessarily forgiving them for them. Forgiveness is good because it calms that anger. You got to forgive them. And it's for you, you know.
It's totally for you. Because when you're judging everyone, you're judging yourself. You're bringing on yourself. Here's what I recommend you do. Do what you want. But because of time. You got to forgive your mother.
I probably do. No, I love my mom. My mom is awesome. But
if you,
yeah, we did. Yeah.
If you love her, if you love her, you will forgive her. And then you have real love her. You don't love her now, but you will when you go to her and say, hey, mother, I have been angry. I've been resenting you for doing this to me. Your lack of patience. Your jealousy of me and my father and our relationship. You tried to control me. And all my life, I resented you for that. I realize now because I have the same spirit you, because you become like your mother. You think like her, you act like her, you get angry like her, you lose your innocence. And you take her identity as a child, we become angry. And she couldn't help herself because her mother did it to her, and her father didn't protect her. And so when you can truly see that you do have this anger, you go to her, "I'm sorry, mother, for resenting you, for being angry. I realize now you can help yourself." Don't ask for forgiveness. Apologize for judging, because that's what anger is, right? And when you say, "I'm sorry for holding that against you," God will forgive you. That's why he said, if you have anything, go and forgive, and I will forgive you, because human beings don't forgive. We're supposed to apologize for judging, for being angry, playing God. When you forgive her, and it doesn't matter how she reacts to it, she can cry, she can yell, she can blame your daddy, she can blame anybody. Let her do what she wants with her own hell. "I just want you to know, I'm sorry for being angry at you, mother. I realize now you can help yourself." God will forgive you and forgive your father for not protecting you from your mother. He loved you. He just didn't know how to deal with her because she was just like his mother. I promise you, God will take the spirit of anger from you, and the world could not touch you. You'll be free.
Okay.
What do you think about that? I think I struggle.
So yeah, of course, like my mom and I would get angry at her when she would, you know, she was like very protective and stuff growing up.
Yeah.
And I think part of the drug use was me being angry at her and going out and rebelling. But I think now it's not anger. I struggle with so much guilt. Like, it's like something I can't get over with what I put my parents through. And well, it is something that I feel like I would love to have the cure for that. Because even today, you struggle with guilt for what you did.
If you drop the anger, guilt will 100% disappear. Mm-hmm. There will be no more guilt. Because what you don't know, and you will find out once you work on yourself, that everything you've ever done, bad or so-called good, was never you. It was because you had the anger, you escaped into your imagination, and you were driven by thoughts and emotions. And then, you know how Paul said in the Bible, "Something made a home in me, and it made me do the things that I didn't want to do, and it prevented me from doing the things, the right thing that I wanted to do. It wasn't me, but something made a home in you." When you became angry as a little child, every human being on earth, no matter what color, you escaped into your imagination, and you've been living there, and it's been controlling you because you identified with it, and you thought it was you doing those things, but it was never you. You were driven by those spirits of the thought. All thoughts are all lies, all the time about anything. You were driven by that when you went into your imagination. Now, once you go and, "Hey, mother, I'm sorry for resenting you," God's going to forgive you, and he's going to bring you out of these thoughts, out of the illusion of darkness, and shine the light, and you'll be free. Guilt will disappear because it was never you. It was something else driving you.
Okay. Are you a pastor too? Weren't you a reverend? Were you a reverend too?
Yeah, but I'm just Jesse. What do you think
just
about
Jesse.
That?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of hung up on the anger is a spirit. So, you know, the Bible says, you know, if God has not given me a spirit of fear. So, I mean, if fear is a spirit, why wouldn't anger be a spirit?
Well, when you
too?
Get
so
rid
that's
of
actually
the
really
anger.
Interesting.
When you get rid of the anger, fear would disappear as well. All the Satan children would disappear. Fear, doubt, worry, insecurity, loneliness, all those things would disappear because they are the family of evil. That's why God said salvation is of the heart. He changes your heart from anger, which is hatred, to love. And once he changed your heart, he changed your nature. He would take all that away. We can't change it. We got to admit that we are evil by being angry and playing God. When we judge ourselves and others, we play God. As long as you play God, you can never know God. You'll know about him, but you won't know him. And knowing about God is not knowing God. But once you admit, you know what? I'm wrong for judging. I'm wrong for being angry. I am evil. And the heart is evil. When you can admit that, God would take it. He would change it to love. And he would start to work on everything else. It'll be amazing.
That does sound amazing. And yeah, you're right. You got to give it to him, though. You got to be able to
and you will.
Hand over that anger. Yep.
And you will. So I recommend do what you want. But I recommend you go and forgive your mother for what she's done. She couldn't help herself. She did the best that she could do. And then forgive your father for not protecting you from her. He couldn't help himself. He didn't know he married a person that he hated. You're attracted to what you hate. But he loved you.
Oh, no. My parents don't hate
your father,
each other. No, that's not true.
But why do you think your mother drive your father nuts?
I don't know. She does drive him nuts. Yeah. But I don't know.
But listen.
I don't want to say that. My mom and dad are probably going to watch this.
Your father is going to be happy to hear this, that he has to forgive so he can deal with everything in a perfect way. So he can deal with your mother. He doesn't realize he married his mama. You know what I mean? But once he forgives his mother, he's going to deal with your mother perfectly. But let me ask real fast, who are you?
Who am I?
Yes.
I am Lauren Witzke. I am perfectly and wonderfully made. Right? Is that the good answer?
So you told me your name and you told me your mate, but who are you?
This is a trick question. I don't know. I'm just me. I'm a mom. I'm a wife. I'm a Christian. That's what I am. It's who I am.
So you told me you're married. You told me you have a child. Mm-hmm. You told me what religion you belong to. But didn't you tell me who you are? Who are you? Who are you?
You're stumping me here.
Here's what I want to do. I want to encourage you to work on you. And when you go and forgive and keep an eye on you, the real you will come back. You will start to remember the real you. It's just that you forgot who you are when you're traumatized by your mother and you went into your head and identified with a foster. I want you to get back to me, call me or whatever, but you will discover who you are and it's going to be amazing. We do not know who we are until we forgive and the light of God take over and start to erase the false self. Take all that away. And you're going to remember who you are, not your name, not who you married, not the kid thing, not the Christian thing. But you will know who you are and it's going to be amazing. Let me know, all right?
For sure. I'll give you a call.
Okay. So listen, I got to put you on the hot seat. I need you to answer these questions as quickly as possible.
Sure thing.
The hot seat.
What is love?
God is love.
Should all foreign languages be banned in the United States?
Yes.
Was Jesus or is Jesus white or black?
Oh, he's white.
Nice. True or false? When she's crying, she's lying.
Oh, yes. True.
True. Would you rather go on a date with a Jew or Muslim?
And I have to go on the date. Suicide isn't an option.
That's funny.
It's not going to be the Jew because he won't pay. So we'll do the Muslim. I'll end up paying for my own meal.
Have you ever seen a ghost?
I think so, yes. But it was after 3 days of not sleeping on methamphetamine. So I don't really know what I was seeing, if it was a ghost or not.
Do you keep a bottle of hot sauce in your purse?
No.
Does a chicken have lips?
No.
Do you love white? What?
They have beaks.
Do you love white people?
Yes.
Do we need more white babies?
Yes.
You know that I started White History Month, right?
That's amazing. No, when is it?
July. We're about to celebrate our 7th year of White History Month.
Amazing.
In July. And you know
why?
You know why I started White History Month?
Because we don't have one. We have Black History Month, we have Pride History Month, but we don't have White History Month.
And
you, thank you,
absolutely,
Mr. Peterson.
And July just feels white.
Amazing. I'll be participating this year.
Nice. Is the Earth flat or round?
I don't know. I haven't seen it. I'm not going to say either way until I see it myself.
Is the Earth, I mean, is it ever okay to call a woman fat?
Yes.
You say yes?
Because how else is she supposed to know she needs to lose weight if you don't call her out? Bullying works.
Amazing. Did you vote for the great white hope?
Trump? Yes.
You know who the great white hope is, right?
Is that Trump?
Yes.
Yes, yes.
The great white hope.
Yes,
did
Donald
you,
Trump.
Oh, I got to ask. What is a man?
It is the, oh, that's a good, I'm trying to think of the perfect words. It is, the better, the God's first creation. It was like, you know, we were like the rib. Women are the rib given from the man. So I guess they're our original, design. No. God's first creation, his greatest creation. There you go.
Did you have fun?
I had a blast. This was great.
It was.
You got me a little on the end, but it was good. It was fun. Thank
when you say got
me.
You a little, what do you mean?
The anger stuff, and you got me off guard a little bit, but it was a great time.
I noticed that most people don't believe that paradise is right here on Earth inside of us, and that we can literally live. Have perfect peace. Christ came that we may have peace. And we can literally have perfect peace. And they don't believe that we were not created to have anger. Anger is a fallen state. And that when we forgive, God will bring us out of that fallen state and give us perfect peace. I hope that for you, because you're a tough lady and you want what's right. And I have a lot of respect for that. And so I'm hoping that you really examine it, see for yourself how you really feel, and go and forgive, and God will forgive you, and it will be amazing for you. It really will. Will you ever run again for office?
I'll just say I am looking very closely at this transgender. The first transgender ever sent to Congress is currently holding a seat in Delaware, and she is up for re-election next year. So we'll see.
Go for it.
We'll see.
Tell the folks how to get your website or whatever information you want to put out.
Okay. So currently you can find me on X, Lauren Witzke, D-E, and Witzke spelled W-I-T-Z-K-E. You can find my work on Died Suddenly. You may have seen our film, Died Suddenly. It was the anti-vaccine film that went viral. It was seen by 20 million people back in 2022. I'm currently over at Lindell TV. You can find us over and our content over at lindelltv.com. I'm also on Telegram, Instagram, X, Gab, and Facebook. So Lauren Witzke, please give me a follow.
So is Lindell the pillow man?
Yeah, he's the My Pillow Man.
Really?
I'm trying to get a Jesse and My Pillow Man collab going.
I love Lindell's pillows.
He is a great man.
I have four of them.
Yep.
So
they're good.
Tell him to come
they're
on.
Really good.
Tell him to come on to Fall Exchange.
Yeah, I will. He's going to come on probably in a couple weeks from now.
Amazing. Thank you so much for tuning in. And thank you all, for coming on. And thank you all for tuning in. Don't forget, you can support the Fall Exchange by joining our membership program on YouTube or going to locals.com and becoming a member. And check out Punchy's Coffee. I have my own coffee, Lauren.
That's great. What kind? Is it flavored or is it just regular coffee?
We have three different flavors.
Ooh.
So you can check it out. Go to jessieleepeterson.shop.
Jessieleepeterson.shop. Three different kinds of coffee.
Absolutely.
And you don't sell that decaffeinated crap, do you?
I don't drink decaffeinated myself. I never understood that.
Yeah, I don't get it either. Why even? What's the point?
I know.
Good stuff. I'll go get some. I'm a coffee fanatic, so I will try out your coffee. I'll let you know what I think.
Right on. And again, thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate it.
No, thank you. Really appreciate it.
All right. Right now. That was amazing.